WPHM. And now, more Paul Miller on Information 1380 WPHM.
Budget Day in Lansing, the day that the governor, as you heard in the news a few minutes ago, showed his budget to the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. And now the work begins on reconciling the governor's plan with what the legislature would like. Joining us right now on the phone is State Senator Phil Pavlo. Phil, good morning. I'm doing well, and I appreciate you joining us this morning. What did you think of the governor's proposed budget? What's to like, what's to be concerned about there?
Well, if you're a taxpayer in Michigan, what's to like is that we've been pretty responsible over the last 6 years. We've been able to put about $1 billion in the bank, and I think that that's a big key. But also, if you're driving to work this morning and you're a taxpayer already on the job, the governor didn't show you any relief in terms of state income tax. That has been a priority for not only me in the Senate, but in the House as well. So, I think the condition of our state budget is solid, and I think that the workers in this state have made significant sacrifices along the way, whether it be with their family or at their job. We all start dialing back that state income tax rate.
So, but where would you make up the difference? Because obviously, if you're going to do that, if you're going to collect less tax revenue, then what are you going to give up in the budget?
Well, there's a couple things. Just the fact that we've been able to put $1 billion away into a savings account suggests that we've probably got enough money to run on now at a pretty good fund balance. The other thing is if a worker or a taxpayer has more money in his pocket, him or her is more likely to go spend that. And whether they spend it or save it, it directly falls back into our economy. So when we talk about budget cuts, you're talking about a $56 billion budget. And what's unique about this is that we'll spend the next 4 months, 5 months, combing through every line item in that budget. And we'll look, see where we can find some efficiencies. But we ought to really be looking at the best investment for taxpayers in this budget.
I think when you ask most people, what should we be, focusing on as far as priorities, where should we be spending the money? Roads and schools, those are the two things that people tend to point to most quickly. And there are increases in spending for both those, aren't there?
Yeah, there are, and we've continued to ratchet up our education spending, and but we're not going to get real significant improvement in education spending in the classroom until we kind of address the long-term issues that are there with the retirement system. So, we're going to be able to handle both. It's just how fast can we pour more resources into education? And I think what you saw in the governor's plan yesterday was kind of a prioritizing a couple things. Career tech education, again, is at the top of the funding priority. So, there's a line item for $20 million to go back to schools, to start buying equipment, train kids, and career opportunities that are available in the form of jobs today.
Slight increase in mental health spending as well, and there was certainly some criticism last year, I think, when there was less money spent on mental health, and that seems to be more of a priority this year. Is that right?
Yeah. There's a couple of good things happen on the mental health front. The Speaker of the House and our leadership in the Senate are very interested in having the full conversation about how we're treating our prisoners and our folks in our county jails and seeing if we can get out ahead of some of that correction spending and apply it to the real problem of why they're there, and that's the mental health. The other thing to keep in mind is that we were smashed pretty hard when Medicaid expansion and elements of Obamacare went into effect in Michigan. The mental health budget was rolled into the Obamacare budget, and all of our local agencies saw, some pretty significant impacts. I think we're behind that now. It's behind us, and, We see it really showing up not only in all 83 counties, but in our correction system too. So taking a holistic approach to how we deal with it from a correction standpoint can potentially get us in a much better efficient spending, I would think.
Phil, how quickly do you think that the legislature can put together a budget based on the governor's proposal and get it passed? Because obviously the reason that it's introduced early is, you know, for quick approval. How quick do you think this process is going to be?
Well, if we get it done in May this year, we'll be 7-0 with this governor. And that's really 3 or 4 months ahead of time. But what it really means, when you have a budget process that works, and it works in a timely manner, all of our school districts will get what their actual state spending is going to be for them. All of our cities and townships will know. And their budgets typically begin in July. So we're sending, you know, stable, reliable budget information to all our locals and school districts. And that's a great goal to have. And I don't see anything that's going to get in the way this year of wrapping this process up in the end of May, 1st of June.
Do you foresee major changes to this proposed budget, or just some tweaking?
You know, I think there's some, you know, I sit on the K-12 school aid subcommittee where we spend the $14 billion in the education. The governor's got some new concepts that he's introduced that we're going to work through. For the first time, he's introduced differentiated payments. In other words, paying more for high school kids. And scaling that through, I think that's a slippery slope that can get us on a potentially dangerous pathway. So we're going to talk about that. You know, in Michigan, we fund every kid the same, and now we're starting to, you know, maybe put some students ahead of others depending on what they're studying, and that's not, to me, the intent of public education.
What do you see the future of public education being? That was certainly discussed with the nomination of Betsy DeVos for U.S. Education Secretary. A lot of people say she just wants to dismantle public education altogether. I mean, and I know that your thinking has evolved on this somewhat. Where are you at right now with the thoughts to public education in Michigan?
Well, I think it was interesting because less than 24 hours after the confirmation of Betsy DeVos, you know, Michigan is looking to spend record amounts of dollars in our public education system. And to suggest that one person at the top of a Department of Education bureaucracy in Washington is really going to be able to steal away public education resources is ridiculous on its face. These decisions are made by people that are locally elected. And, you know, our commitment to public education has never been stronger. And we can talk about the dollar amounts because you can measure that. But there are a number of education policies that we work on that are designed to strengthen our local classrooms, and they have nothing to do with who the education secretary is. And I would suggest that the people who are in such an uproar about Betsy DeVos probably couldn't have named who the education secretary was just 10 days ago. So I think it's a lot about nothing. It's certainly a fevered pitch politically. But in the end, we have 550 school districts in Michigan that are all run by locally elected school board members. And we need to keep that focus and not worry so much about the national political environment. Because if we get caught up in that, we're taking our eye off of what we're supposed to be doing.
You mentioned, Phil, the $1 billion that we have in the rainy day fund. That's pretty good. And as you said, signals the strength of Michigan's economy. What is that money really for, and how do we match up against other states? I mean, is that typical to have $1 billion in reserve just in case?
Yeah, it wasn't when I came into the Senate. When I walked in, we had $2 million in the bank. And when you think about adding $998 million more dollars, it does a number of things. Number one, it's a stabilizing factor. Number two, it saves in short-term borrowing. So states are continually moving through cash flow. And having that resource sitting there not only, you know, kind of puts off the direct need for short-term borrowing, it also strengthens the state's bond rating. So it's no different than, you know, if you're going to go borrow money for your home and you have $25,000 CD sitting somewhere, that shows stability, and it also allows you to maybe get a better interest rate on your home. You know, for government, it's a better bond rating. And when the state of Michigan can do business and not have those massive borrowing costs, those are dollars that could be put toward not only the infrastructure projects that we're borrowing against, but also, you know, the cost of government in total goes down. Mm-hmm. I think the question is $1 billion enough? Do we need $2 billion? Where are we at? You know, we've been able to still, you know, prioritize our spending and be responsible at the same time.
Right. One other thing I wanted to mention, and that is Flint. Flint gets a little more money in this budget as well. Is that something you support?
Yeah, I think there's another $48 million going to Flint, and it's really to continue the programs that have been put in place. You know, the key to Flint's recovery is not only what the state and federal have been able to do, but the actual digging up the lines and getting those replaced. And I hope that by this spring, when construction starts again, that we can accelerate that and get those like contaminated pipes out of the ground and begin providing safe water for the folks up there.
Absolutely. Phil, we appreciate the insight this morning. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again real soon.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.